I think Missourians are pretty straightforward. They've got they have simple desires. They have reasonable expectations. And when it comes to Jefferson City and our state government, I think it's very clear what they want. They want state government to do its job well, and then they want the government to get out of the way. But more importantly, I think they want to have confidence in their leaders and pride in their government, and that is not too much to ask. And I think confidence with leaders begins when leaders are open and accountable. You have to be able to trust the people that are making the decisions on your behalf. You should know why they're making those decisions and who has access to the decision-making process. And unfortunately, if there are those who break the rules, those individuals have to pay a price. It's an honor for those of us in public service to represent Missourians, but with that honor comes a tremendous responsibility to be candid and forthright. And so that's what brings me here with you today. I very briefly started in Christian County early this morning, Greene County, Laclede, here in Cole, giving a speech later in Boone County. In fact, I'm even driving down to Southeast Missouri tonight to be at a parade in the morning. But there have been a lot of people, I promised you when you all came to the Capitol about we're going to roll out some policy initiatives, and people are talking about the economy and their jobs. People are talking about health care. People are talking about education. But the reason that we're unveiling this ethics package first is because without integrity in government, those other issues, while very important, pale in comparison if Missourians don't have faith and trust and confidence in their elected leaders. Elected leadership. And this is not the end all either. Let's talk about some of them. I mean, some of the bullet points, because you all will have some specific questions about them. So, let me highlight a couple of these things, and then we can spend some more time on some of the others. Missouri Ethics Commission. We have to have a strong, functioning ethics commission. It would be my desire to have both state parties submitting some strong partisans from which I would select three, making sure that each congressional district does not have double representation. The way that the ethics commission would work in my mind would be a healthy tension by this group, where you would have co-chairs, where you would not have either party at an advantage or at a disadvantage. If the Ethics Commission determines that, for instance, they need additional resources, we should provide it. I mean, they have to be able to aggressively enforce our rules, our laws, and any changes that we make. I'd like to see some increased fines for some of the violations. One of the things, again, that as the current counsel is the Attorney General, to me, there could be an appearance of political conflict or impropriety. I think the Missouri Ethics Commission should have an independent counsel of their own choosing. So, especially given the things that other things that I would like to include. Now, let me hopefully once and for all on the license fee offices. They will be competitively bid, okay? There are 183 current offices, and in the past, there have been, regardless of party, the incoming governor has had to endure the awarding of these offices as political patronage and cronyism. It's going to end under my administration. I will do that on my own and would work with the legislature to change the law. Now, I respect and understand that there is a different law about the civic groups or not-for-profit groups, and so the legislature may do something different and set the law different, and of course have to abide by the law. But if there is no law, I've they will be competitively bid, and there will be objective criteria, a point system in place. It's already been used, I think, 3 or 4 instances. It's a good starting point, I think, but as far as the objective criteria, all offices will be bid, period. Gift ban, this is something that I already, from my congressional staff, I don't allow my staff to receive gifts from lobbyists, and the same thing will occur with my administration officials, that we will ban all job-related gifts, and I want to see legislation to ban gifts from lobbyists to those in elective office. I will just tell you candidly, this is based on a similar restriction at the federal level. There are de minimis exceptions when someone gets a mug or a t-shirt. I mean, that to me is a de minimis item, or a not-for-profit group like, you know, the Knights of Columbus or some other charitable group. And again, I'm not trying to carve out big loopholes, but this is modeled very similarly on the federal gift ban. A couple of things on the next, on disclosure and accountability. Payouts will be disclosed on the Missouri Accountability Portal. Let's spend a time on the next bullet point, that attorneys representing plaintiffs in second injury fund cases shall not be allowed to donate campaign funds to candidates for attorney general. Now, this will take, obviously, a bill that would have to make it through the process. Let's be a little more specific. In 1992, the Attorney General promised us, if elected Attorney General, that he would not take campaign contributions from attorneys to whom he would provide these second injury fund cases. That has not occurred. In fact, just the opposite has occurred. There have been lots of campaign contributions from those attorneys. And I think it's time to change the law. I'm not trying to restrict the First Amendment rights of any person who wants to represent one of these cases. I mean, they can still donate to other candidates for other office, but not for Attorney General. And if you want to donate to an Attorney General candidate, then you must disqualify yourself from taking one of these cases. To me, it's that simple. It's that appearance of impropriety that I think Missourians are deserving of. Obviously, MHDC, Missouri Housing Development Commission, is a hot button. You all have been writing about it. I agree with the governor and lieutenant governor. We should prohibit elected officials from serving. Here's the thing about that. The low-income housing tax credit, or affordable housing across the state of Missouri, there's a different issue about whether or not it's being efficiently run and whether those tax credits are doing what they were designed to do. But in addition to that separate issue, there is the political argument that there are affordable housing developments being pursued simply because of the political connection. I think prohibiting elected officials from serving on the commission, similar to the Highway Transportation Commission, where you've got it's a non-political decision by the Transportation Commission about how funds should be spent on our state's highways. That is what I envision when we talk about making changes to the Missouri Housing Development Commission. Campaign finance reform. Some of you who are at the Press Association, when my good friend and your colleague from Southeast Missouri, who I have great respect for, wanted me to answer a yes or no question. If I were governor and the bill for unlimited campaign contributions landed on my desk, would I sign it? Here's what I've learned during this last 70 plus days. The current system that we have is broken. Unlimited contributions is an improvement over the current system. How do I say that? Well, this is the third time I've been a challenger for office. there are inherent advantages to an incumbent office holder. We have to make sure that the field is level for a challenger seeking office, as well as those that are already serving in office. And so if the bill on unlimited contributions were to land on my desk, it is an improvement over the current system. I think, however, there is a better alternative even yet, and that's what we outlined today. Putting a $2,500 donation limit per election, again, I'm talking about statewide candidates. We can talk about lesser offices or state senate, state rep. They would not be subject to the $2,500 limit. I mean, we would have a tiered system similar to this, but when I was focusing on our reforms, I wanted to focus on as a candidate for statewide elective office. So a $2,500 limit indexed, something that I think might be beneficial to you all, and that is creating a sortable database of all donors committee where you can put in a name, a zip code, whatever. One of the things that, going toward the last bullet point, we have to eliminate these committee pass-throughs. It is just wrong. It violates the spirit of the law. It doesn't violate the law. It violates the spirit of the law for an individual to be able to write a check to some entity for $13,500 and for that same amount of money to pass through a committee to a candidate. You know, we have limits right now. Those limits are ineffective. And so eliminating these pass-through committees would be an important part of our campaign finance reform. And then I would go to the point on the millionaire's exemption. Again, this is based upon the national model. Look, you know, we should not tilt the scales in favor of someone who, just because they're running for office, who has deep pockets. And so if there's somebody that just an average Missouri citizen who wishes to serve the state of Missouri, but running against someone who is able to self-fund, then it's my belief that self-funded candidate should file a declaration with the Secretary of State, say within 60 days after filing, to say, I'm going to use my own campaign funds, and depending upon the amount that candidate would choose to fund, self-fund, limits would be relaxed accordingly in an effort to give that average candidate, say average candidate in the sense of not being able to provide their own personal finances, a level field from which to challenge someone who has deep pockets. Again, this is based upon campaign finance laws at the federal level. And finally, I mean, these are just some of the things that I would like to see done. There are a number of other issues that some have suggested, for instance, on the past due committees. What about putting a limit on the amount that an individual could give? What about what you all have covered about the use of state resources? What about lobbying reform? What about travel by elected officials? When is it official? When is it political? How do you deal with that? All very valid questions, and all questions that I would like to respond to in some fashion. And therefore, I would appoint a task force that for the first 6 months of calendar year 2009 would have a number of regional hearings throughout Missouri, taking testimony to hear advice and then report their recommendations to me, so that when we begin the legislative session of 2010, we can begin to implement even further reforms. Hopefully all of these other things will have been done by the legislature working with me. But if not, putting into place other ideas on helping make our system open, honest, and accountable. The bottom line is that.
But what would be your plan now? What do you think needs to be done?
Everything else that's in that packet.
Why not just, rather than, I mean, all you're doing here, appears to me, tell me if I'm wrong here, is raising the limit from $1,350 to $2,500. Why not just eliminate, wouldn't the same thing be accomplished just by eliminating the committee pass-throughs?
I say that. It's on the next page, last bullet point on the next page.
Kenny, I heard your explanation,
right,
about how you would, from Media Day, about how you said you would sign the
right
bill eliminating the limits, and then now how you would support limits. I talked to Sarah Steelman right before I came here. She said it's Washington talk. You're trying to have it both ways. You're trying to say I support the repeal of the limits and I support the limits. How do you respond to that accusation that you're doing a double talk here?
It's the question, and David, you were there that day. You introduced me that day, and Rudy was quite persistent in getting a yes or no if the bill landed on my desk. And again, I tried to resist the hypothetical just for this very reason, because it was a hypothetical. If Charlie Shields' bill landed on my desk as governor, would I sign it? And of course, as you remember, he you know, again, I like Rudy, and he was very persistent. And I said yes, because it is a better approach than the current system. But having just experienced this first fundraising quarter and to see we can do even better than having unlimited. Again, unlimited, I would not have been elected to Congress back in 1996 if I weren't able to raise more money than the incumbent congressman did. And granted, that was with limits, but it was on the federal side. The idea is, what can we do to level the field for a challenger and an office holder? One way to do that is unlimited contributions. But I think there is a better way that still levels the field for a challenger and an office holder and provides accountability, especially watching how these pass-through committees are just in many instances a sham, that an individual can write large checks way beyond the individual contribution, and yet those are passed right through to a candidate. So my preference would be, you know, again, I go back, Rudy said yes or no, and I said yes. My preference would be these principles that I've outlined here today. And if other candidates, you know, look, other candidates are going to say what other candidates want to say. What I want to know is, where are they on this package? Will they, for instance, embrace the idea of getting political elected leaders off MHDC? Will they support a gift ban by lobbyists to their own administrative officials or to lawmakers? You know, what do they have to say about the substance of these other ideas? Instead of just trying to say, well, you said this on one day to a yes or no question, and here you're saying something else. What do you have to say about, you know, open, honest, accountable government?
How would you prohibit a very wealthy person from setting up a bazillion committees, being the only contributor to each of those committees and having those separate committees make campaign donations?
One of the things, and this is exactly the kind of question that I would defer, for instance, to the task force, an idea. Again, I'm going to pull a number out of the air. Please don't take this number as this is, you know, what I'm proposing. What if we put, for instance, a hard limit of, pick a number, Bob, $50,000, that in the aggregate, an individual could only contribute $50,000 to you as a candidate, to David as a candidate, to Steve as a candidate, and then maybe the rest of the money to one of the parties, but $50,000 in the aggregate would be the limit. And again, I just pull that out of the air. That would be one way to rein in or to limit. Now, look, whatever happens, if something like that were to actually make it into law, guess what? It would be challenged. And because there's a First Amendment, you know, again, the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court has told us that there's an absolute right to speak politically through your pocketbook, but they have allowed some reasonable limits in that regard. And so I suspect something like that, restricting an individual's right to donate to whatever committee, would likely be challenged, and we would have to await the outcome of that decision. But I think it's a reasonable restriction.
It boils down to how the court would define reasonable.
Well, that plus how it would actually be drafted in law. And again, that's what the reason for the task force idea would be a way to help talk about ways to deal with that pass-through issue in a way that could be constitutional.
Can you clarify what you mean by eliminating the pass-through? Do you mean abolishing political party committees?
No.
Do you mean making them abide by the same cap as the individual donor?
Yes. By abiding by the same cap, not allowing the 10 times amount,
okay,
basically.
Congressman, isn't it, you know, I think you and Attorney General Nixon, and I guess somewhat Treasurer Steelman, have all criticized these committees, yet all three of you took hundreds of thousands of dollars through this committee at this time.
The hundreds of thousands of dollars, Jason,
It was $250,000 for you, $680,000 for Nixon, $300,000 for Steelman.
And on the $200,000 was our own congressional campaign money that was, I mean, we're not talking about individuals writing checks so that somebody made it through. You're right. It could have been just as easy to convert, I'm told by our experts, that we could have just completely rolled over our congressional campaign account as hard dollars into that account. But that's beyond that. So what's your question? What I've said is that this current system that we're operating under, it's unfortunate, and it's the system. We're all having to play by the rules, and I would suggest of the three of us that you've referenced, who was the third on the totem pole? who was number three in that regard? I'm not saying, look, what I'm saying, there's nothing illegal right now under our current law about that, but the system needs to be radically changed.
It seems like the argument, though, is you're not going to bring a knife to a gunfight, which is the same argument that Nixon did when he...
I'm not criticizing Attorney General Nixon or Treasurer Sarah Steelman for taking the pass-throughs, Jason, am I?
No.
Did I criticize them?
What
I'm saying is that the system is the system. What I'm saying is if you elect me governor, Missouri, here is something I want to focus on to change. This was sort of a hypothetical. We talked about the Missouri Press Association. What if the limits were in place, or what if the bill were to pass of unlimited contributions, and then suddenly, well, we have a wide open, race in the end of August. I happen to think, again, the challenges, somebody would challenge, if unlimited limits, and so I don't think that this race is going to be affected even if the law were to make it to the governor's desk. So I am under the impression that the current system is the current system through the August primary through November. But if I'm elected governor, I'm going to do everything within my power to work with the legislature to change the current system because it is broken.
Let me give you a hypothetical. Why not just do away with this? We had a system here before the Supreme Court decided that we should go back to the old way. And that was Rex Sinkfeld, using him as an example, and there may be others, not many who gave as much as he did. He wants to give candidate A, B, or C X amount of dollars. He does so, it's out in the open. Everybody in Missouri who wants to know can find out Rex gave X amount of dollars to the candidate. He was told he can't do it by the Supreme Court, for better or for worse, so he's ended up, the bottom line is he's still giving the same amount of money, except now he's using these committee pass-throughs, as you call them. Why not eliminate that and just suggest that we go back to it, or we create a system without the blackout period, which is what the Supreme Court had a problem with, so that we can go into a system where there's absolute openness and people can give what they want, and I, as a citizen of the state, can follow how much you're getting from David or from anybody else in this room.
And I can give however much I want with no free speech issues.
Well, and that is, again, that middle tier that Rudy asked me about was the unlimited that is constitutionally permissible, and that would be an improvement over the current system because it is open, it is wide open. To me, though, there, as far as integrity and appearances, federal candidates right now operate under a system where, I mean, limits are limits. I mean, you cannot, for instance, commingle, you can't raise corporate, for instance, at the federal level. And that is that's a limit, and it's a workable limit. And the Supreme Court, again, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but the U.S. Supreme Court has said that those limits were appropriate. I will tell you, I thought that, my prediction was, that the issue advocacy piece, where the restrictions on issue advocacy, I thought those were blatantly violative, but the Supreme Court said they weren't. So in an effort to make sure Missourians have that public trust and confidence in their government and in the way we elect candidates to serve them in state government. I think that this has disclosure as well as some limits. You all have mentioned a single individual. Let's not forget that, you know, and I don't mean this to pick a battle. I mean, the labor unions are well organized and have a number of these types of committees as well. And so I understand that this is a very complicated type of system that we have, but certainly this current system needs to be changed dramatically.
Why is there a need, though, in your proposal here to nearly double the donation limit? Why don't you just keep it the same?
It's ironic to me that someone running to represent a part of the state, one-ninth of the state, can raise $2,500 per individual at the federal level, but cannot run. But to run statewide, you have to seek contributions that are 40% less than that.
Is the federal system perfect? I mean, this is the system that had been in effect since, I mean, it's gone up with inflation, but it's been
right.
In effect since 1994, except when it was put on hold by the courts. Why?
Because if we get to,
because more of a federal model.
Because part of this is, as eliminating the pass-throughs is to then allow individuals, again, I'm looking for the challenger as well as the sitting office holder, to be able to raise sufficient revenue, campaign revenue, to get a message out statewide. And by closing the loophole, allowing that candidate for statewide office to raise sufficient funds, and $2,500 seemed to me to be a reasonable amount.
$1,350 is just too low.
This is a big state, and we have a lot of media markets, and so it's a challenge at $1,350.
I see, but what about corporate contributions? Should corporate contributions be limited in the state?
That would be something I would love to hear from the Ethics Advisory Task Force on.
Would you support that?
That would be something I would love to chat with the Ethics Advisory Task Force. It's something I've lived under for the last 14 years. I've learned my lesson from the Rudy Keller incident, so I'm not going to give you a yes or no on that.
I seem to recall that, in fact, your state senator, I believe, actually proposed an amendment in the campaign finance debate to raise the amount, to raise the limits like you want to, and it failed in the Senate. And this sort of goes to my question. How are you going to get this through the Senate if they, you know, repeal campaign finance limits when it seems like the Senate, even with the Republicans and five Democrats, seem to disagree with you on this?
Some of these on the gift ban and license fee offices and some things that I can do as governor via executive order. Many of these others and what we've talked about at length on campaign finance would, of course, require a legislative action. I look forward to working with the legislature as governor to try to implement these. And again, this is where I'd like what I would like to see happen. There may be other ideas that legislators would want to, I mean, the legislative process is a very fluid process, and I'm open to any and all ideas that helps bring open, honest, accountable government to the state.
Can I clarify a few
you
more
may.
Things here?
Sure.
The gift ban, does that include meals?
What, as you see, the allowances for receptions and other widely attended events
it's a big meal, but not a little meal.
See, that's what we got into at the federal level, and it's just, you know, the hypotheticals here we could talk about ad nauseum. But even to the point, let me just tell you that as we've tried to, at the ethics level, to say, well, it's okay to have a reception if you have toothpicks, but not with silverware. And, you know, that's the thing that just but I think there have to be reasonable exceptions. I would say that one-on-one meals would not qualify under the exception.
All right. What about
would not qualify?
Would be banned.
Okay. It would not qualify as an exception. If you're at a reception where there are 25, 30, 50 people, or a widely attended event, to me, then there's no problem with that. On the other hand, were you to take me out, for instance, as I know you would want to, Churchill's, and ply me with wine and all that, one on one, I think that would be a violation.
Again, that goes back to my previous question. That I believe was put forward by two Democrats, Rachel Storch and Joan Gray, and that's gone absolutely nowhere in the legislature. How are you going to pass that?
Are the same personalities going to be there? Am I saddled with every single passed vote on any amendment in Jefferson City? Or is next year a new legislature, a new governor, new ideas? I understand, having been a legislator for almost a dozen years, I understand when you take a position on a particular issue, you may not want to change that position. But the legislative process necessarily involves give and take, and making the case that these changes are important and necessary.
Let me finish clarifying a couple
of
things,
David.
On the gift ban. Does that also include travel?
That is something we did not, the travel was something that we reserved for the advisory.
Okay.
Group.
I talked with Sarah Steeler right before I came over here, and she thought that was inconsistent of you to be proposing a gift ban because, as a congressman, she claimed you had taken something like 18 trips paid for by businesses, lobbyists, interest groups, which she said were something like $18,000 since the year 2000. Inconsistent. I don't know. I can't verify your numbers.
No, you need to verify those numbers.
Have you taken trips at lobbyist business interest group expense, and is that inconsistent?
No, it's not. Look, right now it is illegal for me to get on a plane with any individual. I cannot fly across the state with a good friend of mine whose daughter babysits my kids because of the ethics rules in Congress. It's a violation. On the other hand, there are trips that we get pre-cleared by our ethics commission. And so when I went down to speak to the National Biodiesel Board, because I'm a leader in that, we have disclosure, and it's part of the our financial disclosure forms. And it's just like Steve said, it is out there, and so it's not inconsistent at all. In fact, I would really urge you to examine and just go to my financial disclosures. They're on record as to what trips that last year, for instance. The reason they didn't make them on our Missouri financial disclosure was because it was from March to March. But last year, because of my leadership in the agricultural field, Farmers Union invited Colin Peterson and me to speak to their group, the Biodiesel Board, and I think the Ethanol Group. Again, all focused on my official duties, but we got those pre-cleared by ethics, and we follow the rules.
On your disclosure and accountability, you said you didn't want to create First Amendment issues.
Right.
But if you tell an attorney that they cannot give to the candidate of their choice, how can you get around having violated their First Amendment rights to make contributions and then to do their jobs? That if Joe Blow comes and says, I need you to represent me in a second injury fund battle.
No, it's not Joe Blow. What it is an assignment of second injury fund cases by the Attorney General to the attorney. And so the question is, which do you prefer? You're right. There is a constitutional right to make a contribution, subject to limits or if we had no limits. On the other hand, there is no constitutional right to be assigned a case on the second injury fund. So does the attorney prefer his First Amendment rights more than his ability to have a case assigned him by an attorney general?
So the issue is the Attorney General's assignment.
Yes.
If he comes into it as a representative of an injured person and
that's a
not
different,
assigned
right,
the case.
Right. That's a different thing. Okay. That is a different thing.
I'd like to just clarify something. You can go to the FEC right now to find out whether there might be a violation or a potential violation of something you do. And you can also check with your ethics folks to find out if there might be a potential violation. Would you favor some kind of a system here in Missouri which would be similar to what you have at the federal level? Which, let's say I say, Kenny, I want to buy you a Big Mac. It's fine. But if I want to send you for Mexican food down to Cancun, we got a problem. You know, there's an in-between somewhere. We got the
right, the
opposites here. Where do we come together? Would you favor something like that, or do we have
favor
anything?
Favor something like, you mean as far as disclosure?
Where you could go to the State Ethics Commission, and they could say, hamburger for lunch, not a problem. Sending it to Mexico for Mexican food, that's a problem. I mean, could we have a system like that? Would that be something you'd want, rather than just everything is off the table? I've known Scott for years, but I couldn't take him out to lunch because he's working for you, and that would be a violation.
You know, again, the effort is to establish these guidelines, and the guidelines would be, and everywhere you draw the line, you could create a hypothetical where there's one side or the other. And again, you know, the reception, how many does a widely attended event include? Well, the magic number, at least in under our ethics rules, are 25. So there is the spirit of the law, and then there is the law. And so trying to thread the needle, if you will, to provide a reasonable exception, but still get to the point of the matter, and that is to ban gifts or meals.
Quick question about the license fee offices.
Yeah.
Are you suggesting basically just running this through the state purchasing office, just like every other leasing and bid?
What's happened right now is the director of the Department of Revenue, I think on three separate instances of late, have actually done this competitive bid idea, and so it would actually be through a standard contract or bidding out, and so there's a point system.
Just using state requirements now for leasing offices.
Right. Correct.
There also have been proposals that all those offices go to nonprofits.
Right.
And do away with competitive bidding among competing businessmen like.
That's why I'm saying that if the law, whatever the law happens to be, if that change were to be made, if the governor were to sign it, I mean that would be the law and would sort of take this issue off the table.
But you'd be okay with that.
Well, what I would prefer is, and part of that too, Bob, is that a local civic club, I think 34 or 35 civic organizations right now run license fee offices. I know one county in particular has a Farm Bureau. I know, in fact, we were just in Lebanon, and it was a civic group that actually ran the office and has for several years. So I don't have an objection. The most important thing on the whole fee office is, are Missourians getting the best service they can for the fees that they pay? So efficiently run offices is the goal, and a competitive bid process is the way to go about it.
It strikes me as I was looking over your millionaire's exemption that had this been in place right now, this is something you would benefit from. Sarah Steelman just loaned her campaign $500,000. That would have triggered your proposal. I mean, is there any coincidence? Is this just coincidence
loaning
her campaign $500,000?
No. In fact, I'm trying to think. Kraske, we had talked to about this sometime. We talked about some of these things long ago. But in 1996, I had a primary, and a wealthy physician spent over $900,000 in a primary, and I had $250,000. I won by 165 votes out of 38,000 cast. I feel that good and truth and justice prevailed in that instance, and I've become good friends with the gentleman who ran. But the point is that, look, how do we best have a level field for a challenger who is of modest means versus someone who has deep pockets? One way to do that, and again, this is modeled very much on the federal. My good friend Harold Ford running against Bob Corker in Tennessee to be the U.S. Senator. and Corker went deep into his pockets, and it relaxed. Harold was able to raise additional funds from some of the same people who had already maxed out by these limits being relaxed to give him a fair shot running against a multimillionaire.
Cast yourself as the man of modest means and Sarah Steelman as the person of deep pockets.
I'm not saying you're the one who brought up Sarah Steelman. I'm just saying that this has nothing to do with the most recent report.
Okay.
Other than, you know, this is something that I think follows right along with my long career as being a reformer and someone who focuses on ethics and integrity in government.